Hello, and welcome back to Green Living Podcast. This week's guest is Samantha Lee. Samantha Lee is a Western herbalist and founder of Let's Get Natural. She takes a holistic approach to health and wellness while incorporating traditional plant medicine. She shares herbal benefits and remedies, DIY home preparations, and how to wildcraft for your own food and medicine. Her Instagram is at let's.get.natural. In this episode, Samantha and I chat mainly about wildcrafting, and it was really, really interesting, and I hope that you enjoy it. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Samantha Lee. Hello, Samantha Lee, and welcome to Green Living Podcast.
Hey, how are you, Claire?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for being my guest this week. And can you please tell my listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Samantha Lee. I am a Western herbalist and the founder of letsgetnatural.com. And I grew up in Southern California and have been living in Germany for the past 6 years now. So right now I'm in Munich.
Oh, that sounds incredible. And are you there for your Let's Get Natural?
So originally, no, I came because I just wanted to live in a foreign country. One thing led to another. Now I have a German boyfriend and I'm stuck. No, it's great. I love it here. It's very fun. But yeah, I started studying and practicing herbalism in Germany.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And can you tell me more about yourself as an herbalist?
Yeah, so herbs can be worked with to support your health, wellness, increase your energy and overall vitality. You can add plants to your daily routines to prevent chronic illnesses and diseases or problems. And even if you already have a problem, no matter how big or small, herbs and plants can be added into your life to help with that. And so as a Western herbalist, I practice all of this. And I share and educate about plant benefits, how to make different herbal preparations, and even how to wildcraft for your own food and medicine. So I do this on Instagram and YouTube, on my website, and in workshops.
And you have a workshop coming up. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so much fun. So it's on April 24th, which is great because we're going to be talking about spring wildcrafting. So we're going to go through, it's really for beginners or people that want to learn more. Maybe they're wildcrafting a little bit, but they don't really know how to use the herbs for different types of medicine or how to work with the different parts of it. So we're going to go through and talk about exactly how to be safe and sustainable while wildcrafting. We're going to go through and look at some specific plants that are growing all over the world right now and within the upcoming weeks and months. And yeah, so people can feel confident and go out and yeah, start wildcrafting and making and enjoying their own herbal medicine.
And is this offered online internationally or is it going to be local to you?
Yeah, so it is a digital workshop series. So it's going to be live on April 24th. And it's, so you can do it from anywhere around the world, but it's going to be recorded. So even if you do miss it, you can always buy the recording, which will be really great.
Oh, that's incredible. And is there's no limit then if you're already recording it to how many people can take the class. Is that correct?
Yes. So if during the live class, I think there might be a cap. I'm doing it through another organization, but I'm not sure what they're capping it at, but yeah, if you decide to get the recording of the workshop, then you can have that forever.
And you have a discount code for Green Living Podcast listeners.
Yeah. So this is, so the discount code is not for the workshop, because I'm doing it through another organization. Unfortunately, I can't give, I would love to, but I have an ebook where I go through all of this information and even have more plants. So for all of the Green Living podcast listeners, I'll give a discount code for 20% off that ebook. So it can be, the discount code can be GREEN20.
Okay, perfect. And I will make sure to leave that in the description for everyone. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Yeah, it'll be, it's really fun. And it's really the herbs that and plants that I put into that book, it's all pretty good beginner herbs. So people can feel comfortable when they go out.
And you mentioned wild crafting, and that's kind of where I believe that we're going to focus mainly today. So can you give me a brief description of what wild crafting is?
Yeah. So I do want to mention that wild crafting and foraging, you might hear both being used, and I use both of those words interchangeably, as do a lot of other herbalists. So wildcrafting or foraging is when you go out and gather herbs, plants, and mushrooms from the wild. And you can use those plants for in food. You can create different preparations, use it for tea. I don't know, a lot of people have like amazing recipes on Instagram. So that's always fun to look through. You can make your own like cough syrups. You can make salves, lotions out of everything. I even know some people that make some perfumes out of the plants that they wildcraft. The possibilities are really endless.
Wow, that's incredible. So how did you get into wildcrafting? Was it through learning about herbalism and then wanting to go out and forage or wildcraft for yourself?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I began studying medical herbalism. So I just learned the plant benefits, how to work with different plants, and how to create my own preparations. So I always, at the beginning, I always ordered plants from trusted suppliers. And that was really great. But I was always nervous to go out and wildcraft because a lot of my classes were done online. And I just thought that I had to learn how to identify different plants in person from someone, because there are many different toxic and poisonous plants out there that are even deadly. Yes. And so that is something that everyone should always keep in mind if you are a beginner, or even if you are the most advanced herbalist. Like, it's very, very important that we always are sure of what we're wildcrafting. But yeah, after a few years of studying and practicing herbalism, I decided, you know what, I really, really want to go out and start wildcrafting. So I just learned one plant at a time. And yeah, I took some courses, I read some books, and yeah, I started doing it, and it became more accessible than I thought it would be. I really thought, no, I'm not going to wildcraft until I move back to the US and I can learn from somebody that, you know, speaks English and I feel comfortable. But yeah, it's really accessible. You can learn through a book or an online class. And I think, yeah, that's really important for people to know, because people can really miss out on something really great and special if they're too afraid to try.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure a lot of people that might be interested in it, it's a little nerve-wracking, as you said, because there are a lot of things that are toxic and or could be toxic maybe at certain levels. So, and as you said, learning online is great, but then actually going out and doing it yourself, and maybe for beginners, for herbalism in general, as you experienced learning and then ordering through trusted suppliers, is a great place to start for that. And then going out, do you feel more of a connection when you wildcraft or forage?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the most special things about it. It's meditative. It's fun. And it brings you really closer to nature, and it just takes your relationship with the plants to the next level. And that might seem silly, but once you do it, I think you feel it. It's really a cool thing. It's like, I don't know if you garden at all, But
a little bit.
Okay. So when I was younger, I never touched any kind of plants. I never gardened because I just thought I did not have a green thumb, and you either had a green thumb or you didn't. And so a few years ago, my boyfriend really got me into gardening, and it just took my relationship with plants again to a new level, because it was so cool seeing the plants grow and at its different stages. And once you start wildcrafting, you notice that too. You go out in spring, and maybe let's take stinging nettles, for example. That is a great beginner plant to wildcraft because it's pretty hard to misidentify, because it stings you. It really hurts, but it's super medicinal and it is super edible and nutritious. So if you go out in spring, in early spring, you can wildcraft the leaves and eat it, use it for foods and pestos and soups. And as it gets later into the season, you get to use the different plant parts. So you can use the seeds later in the season. And the seeds are actually great. They're considered an adaptogen. So adaptogens give you more energy and helps your body respond to stress better. So that could be physical stress, mental stress. So on days that I eat nettle seeds, I often find myself not drinking coffee. So that's pretty cool. Just wildcrafting, you definitely get a new relationship to the plants.
Since you're in Germany right now, have you done any wildcrafting or foraging in the States or in other countries? And have you found a difference in that?
Yeah. So I would say I began really wildcrafting in Germany. And my boyfriend's family is Croatian. So we go there every summer, and it's really great living in and traveling to different countries, because you can learn from people and different cultures and their traditions with medicine. I've learned from a lot of people in Germany and the different ways that they work with different plants. And so I've also done the same in Croatia and tried to learn from my boyfriend's grandmother and his aunt. And it's really more a part, I would say, of the culture there. So it's more of common knowledge to have this connection with plants and nature and work with these natural preparations and using these natural remedies. So I learned a lot. But I am surprised that there are many plants that just grow in most places around the world. So yes, there is a difference in what grows in different places, but it's also, you'd be surprised what you'll find in different locations and what's the same.
That's incredible. I love that it's not just the connection, because I would think you would have such a connection with nature at that point, foraging or going, you're just out in nature more in general, and mm-hmm. that cultural aspect as well. And I think it's incredible you've been able to travel around two different places. And yeah, I'd say probably not so much in the US. We're versed in foraging, but other people are. And it's also a history lesson at that point too. You're traveling through history and what someone used, you know, in the 1800s can still be utilized today.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So it's really interesting. I've been lucky enough to learn from some Italians and their traditional uses with certain plants. That's been really fun. And it's amazing because I think I learned this in my history herbalism part. A lot of Italian seasonings that we know today are a part of the culinary tradition and still a part of the culinary tradition. They were put into place when there were a lot of respiratory infections. So all of these really smelly aromatic herbs, oregano, rosemary, thyme, all of those, you would think, you know, Italy. And it's because in Italy, back at that time, they put them in the food so they can smell them in and help support your respiratory system to help prevent the flu or deal with it if you already have it. And you'll see the same in French culinary, all of those smelly aromatics So it's really, really interesting to learn about. There's the more you learn, the more you realize there is to learn.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I never thought about the, because we think of, oh, you know, rosemary smells nice and oregano as well, but I didn't. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. It's just all so interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And you'll find that throughout the world. It's, yeah, it's very,
yeah,
very
a common thread. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of cultures will use what they had. So if you, whatever the aromatic smelly herbs you had in that region, that's what you use in your food. The thing about herbalism, my teacher Rin always says, whoever uses the most plants wins. So it's like, you just add them in wherever you can. Drink a cup of herbal tea in the morning before you go to bed, support your nervous system, add, spice it like you mean it to foods. As much as you can get it in your system, it'll help. Just make sure that it's a safe herb, because I've heard people say multiple times, well, I don't have to worry about it because it's natural. I don't really need to look into it because it's natural. And that's not the case. I mean, think about these deadly plants. There's some mushrooms that you take a bite and, I mean, you'll die within 15 minutes. We need to respect nature. And just for example, St. John's wort. Ugh, if you haven't had it yet, I recommend it. I love St. John's wort tea. It's just the best. It's a little bitter, but it's great for detox, depression, so many other things. But it helps detox so much that if you take a pharmaceutical, then it will detox and get that pharmaceutical out of you before you're actually able to assimilate and ingest it. So you need to always be careful and make sure that that the herbs that you add into your routine, habits, protocol, that it's safe.
Yes, yeah. Definitely consult your doctor or whoever you see for your medical.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, always.
And I do love, I wanted to go back to something that you said, which I really liked in terms of sustainability and local, is when people weren't able to mail order, you know, dried herbs online, you just go outside and that's what you find and that's what you have and that's what you have access to. I think it is great to have access to a bunch of different things now, but for sustainability and I guess low waste and everything else, that's so important. And I think as well, even if you know you're not going to stay in one place for long, having that extra step of connection to where you are right now through the plants, herbs, I think can be really beneficial for people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the great things also about wildcrafting. You know that it's clean and you know that it's sustainable. But you always, I have a checklist before I always go wildcrafting, and that when I teach people to wildcraft, that they should always go through this checklist. And that's two of the points on that checklist are make sure that the area that you're wildcrafting is clean and that you're doing it in a sustainable way, because it's so great that we're able to do it sustainably, but we need to make sure that we are. Because we might think, oh, well, we're getting it ourselves in the wild, it's sustainable, but you really need to make sure that you leave some plants for our other wildcrafting friends, animals, insects, just the plants that they're able to reproduce and be there for years to come. And there's also a lot of at-risk plants. So you can look on United Plant Savers. It's a free resource where you can find a list of at-risk plants, so you know not to wildcraft that. And in those cases, it's sustainable to buy that specific plant from a cultivated source, so somebody that's growing it themselves and not going out and wildcrafting it.
Oh, good. I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy you mentioned the sustainable foraging, because that was something I wanted to ask you about, because I have seen some foraging videos of I think one was like of mushrooms, and she was really adamant at, you know, you need to make sure that you're not taking too much, that you're kind of, once you pull the mushroom, you're like kind of pushing it down, Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Maybe for beginners, just some good rules of thumb for sustainable foraging.
So in general, I go through a few steps. I make sure that the plant is not at risk in general, in your country and the world. And then I go to a more regional look and make sure that the plant is not endangered at a regional level. And you can look at state or federal websites that have a list for that. And then when you're actually at the site and you know that, okay, we're good to go, this plant is abundant, you still want to make sure that that you see a lot of that specific plant around. So maybe I'll go somewhere and I'll see, maybe I'm wildcrafting for elderberries to make a cold and flu syrup. And I see elderberry shrubs for, I don't know, as far as the eye can see. Great. I feel good. I'm still not going to take all of the elderberries. I'm not even going to take them all off of one tree. Maybe I'll take a few from each tree, leave some for everyone, the birds, the people, the whoever. And you just always want to be mindful. And you also need to think, okay, well, there's a good amount of plants here. I'll only take a little bit, but you don't know who was there before you. So don't always take proportional to what's there, because you don't know, maybe somebody already took half of it. So just always keeping that in mind and being very mindful of that. And when in doubt, you can always take a few and maybe replant whatever it is yourself, or you could buy some seeds and grow it yourself. You could always buy it from a supplier. Another thing that you can consider with sustainability is if it's a native plant or an invasive species. So if a plant is native to that area, then it has always been there and a part of the ecosystem. But a lot of our invasive species come over and they're not that friendly of neighbors, and they like to spread and take over from the actual biodiversity there. And so those are always good plants to wildcraft. All of the weeds. Yeah, a lot of the weeds are very medicinal, edible. They're great. So even with those, I still wouldn't wildcraft everything you see. You still want to be sustainable. Yeah, but I think that's a good way to go. In my ebook and in the workshop, most, if not all of the plants are considered weeds and are invasive. So you should feel pretty confident and comfortable with the amount that you're wildcrafting. And also, whenever you're looking at a specific plant, then you should always look at how to harvest it so that the plant is able to regenerate and regrow either that season or next year. So you're doing it in a good way. If you want, I can also share one plant that it's actually sustainable to wildcraft it. So
yeah,
garlic mustard is a very nutritious plant for humans. It is, I think it is, has more like nutritious value than maybe any cultivated green. I'm like 99% sure it's more than any cultivated green, but there's more vitamins and minerals in it than spinach, than kale. It's really, really great. And that goes with a lot of our wild greens, because a lot of the cultivated greens that we're eating and we're buying from the supermarket, they don't have as much nutritional value as they used to, because the soil is being reused and all of the minerals are getting taken out. And with wild greens, they do have all of that good, rich nutrient value. But anyway, with garlic mustard, it's very, very invasive. It spreads super easily, and it is not a friendly neighbor. It emits chemicals from its roots into the soil, which kill and stop the growth of other plants. So it goes there and it takes over. It will kill the other plants. Insects do not like garlic mustard. Animals do not eat it. It's just not a friendly thing to have around. So as humans, we can wildcraft it, use it for our own food, and help the environment. So that's pretty cool. So with that, you want to make sure that you take out the whole plant, put it in a bag so the seeds don't spread, because you definitely don't want to wildcraft it and then spread the seeds somewhere else and then have it, you know, colonize there. So that's, I always like talking about garlic mustard, because you're actually helping the environment by wildcrafting it.
Oh, I think that's amazing. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Helping the environment and taking out the invasive species. And I will either get a photo from you or look it up, and I'll post that on my Instagram so people know what that looks like in general. Yeah. And and I'm also going to do a blog post for your episode. So if you want to mm-hmm. like write a little something about that, I'll include a photo of that as well. And you did mention something, and I wanted to ask about if there are any specific tools you use or for beginners to use, because you said garlic, what was it?
Garlic mustard.
So garlic mustard. I was thinking garlic salt. Yeah, it
smells like garlic. No, well, you could use it to make like garlic mustard salt.
Right.
But it smells like garlic. It kind of tastes like garlic. Yeah.
And so are there any specific tools? Because you said to take it from the root, but do you have any that you use or that you recommend, or are you just going out with your hands?
So it depends on what you're wildcrafting. Everything in my ebook and the workshop that I'm going to be doing, you don't need to go out and buy anything. You can either use your hands, garden scissors, or even kitchen scissors. So that's really easy. When you're wildcrafting for certain things, like maybe roots, you need a shovel. But for garlic mustard, I just use my hands, because it's really easy to get the roots out. It's not a very big like root system. But what else? I usually bring along a paper bag and I keep it open for when I go home. So I let I leave my plants in there, unless I'm wildcrafting berries. Then I bring a sturdy plastic container, or just any kind of sturdy container, so then the berries don't get smushed. Yeah, but I'm sure you could get like really fancy, expensive wildcrafting gear, which is great, but you definitely don't have to. And absolutely not necessary. Oh, but it's nice to have a pair of gloves. It depends on what I'm wildcrafting, but I like having a pair of gloves, especially for our friends like stinging nettles. We definitely want gloves or thistles. I'll see videos of people that like just are doing it with their hands, and ooh, good for them, but why? Yeah. So there's just no need. With stinging nettles, as soon as you dry it or cook it, then it won't sting you. So definitely don't eat it raw, because it will sting you on the way down. But and so you'll want to use gloves for that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I figured there wasn't anything too fancy. So I think that's good for people that are maybe hesitant, maybe financially about it, that there's really, it's what you have on hand.
Yeah, definitely.
How often do you go foraging or wildcrafting throughout the year, or does it change seasonally?
Yes. So spring, summer, and fall, as often as I can. Winter, not as much, because there are things that you can wildcraft for it, but just me personally, if you asked, I'm sure if you asked a few different wildcrafters, you might get a few different answers. But me personally, spring through fall is my sweet spot, especially with spring and fall, or I'm sorry, spring and summer.
Yeah. It's the season now. Are you excited?
I know. It's so great. Oh my gosh. Going out and just seeing everything pop up. I'm so excited. Dandelions. I'm finally seeing dandelions pop up, which I'm so excited about, because I don't know if you know this, but dandelions are food and medicine from flower to root. It's like such a strong medicine and edible. You can add the flowers to your salads if you want. They're nutritious. You can add the leaves, the young leaves to your salad. Oh my gosh, that's another one that's very, very, very chock full of vitamins and minerals. You can use it as tea. It's good for your kidneys, bloating. What else? The roots are really, really good for your, it's a prebiotic. So it like helps your gut health, your gut microbiome.
I have heard about dandelions specifically being kind of a full package one.
Yes. Yeah. And something that I love about dandelions. So they have this like bright yellow flower. So it's like the sun. And so I like to wildcraft that and infuse it in honey and part of it in alcohol, then with a few other flowers. And you can take it throughout the winter to help with seasonal depression. It's very uplifting. It's called an exhilarant, the fancy term for it, but yeah, it's uplifting. Prefer to support like small local growers, but if you don't know where to get a certain plant, then Mountain Rose Herbs is fantastic. And yeah, really trusted. They're great.
Yeah. And I'm happy you mentioned that too, because yeah, my local bulk store carries a bunch of amazing things. And I haven't really thought about talking to them about where they get it specifically. But I'm happy you mentioned that, because locals might also have amazing knowledge as well of the terrain and land. Maybe you don't know that someone like your neighbor knows about foraging or herbalism. So maybe reaching out and seeing who locally can maybe take you out and teach you about all of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You could also look up local herbalists or, who else? Once you start doing it, if you start with something easy and something that you feel comfortable, go one at a time. It's funny because like it starts out very overwhelming. A lot of people call it the green wall. So when you walk by, it's just like a big wall of green. But then once you start to meet the plants, you know, start to meet them one-on-one, then you walk by and you're, oh, it's a green wall and some chickweed over there. And then the more you do it, the more you'll notice all your plant friends. And also the more you might notice other people wildcrafting, because before I started, I didn't really notice or see anybody wildcrafting. And since I've began, people have come up to me while I'm wildcrafting and they'll ask me, oh, what am I doing? And they'll tell me what they forage for. And sometimes I'll walk by some people wildcrafting. We love like coming across like a German grandma, like wildcrafting from like whatever. And then I'll go up to her and like ask her like what she uses it for, how she like knows what it is. And yeah, you can really learn a lot from even strangers. People are usually happy to talk about all of that. And so don't be shy. If you see somebody wildcrafting, go up, just do your homework. Just because somebody tells you something doesn't make it true. That I include myself in that. Even with every single plant I go out and wildcraft for, before I go out, no matter who teaches me the information, whether it's a teacher, whether it's I don't know, a very good gardener or whoever, I always, maybe I'm reading it in a wildcrafting book, I always find two trustworthy sources and make sure that I find the information twice, even if I'm getting this for wildcrafting specifically. For how to work with plants, if it's like a trusted herbalist, usually you can, you know, take what they say and go with it. But with wildcrafting, safety is key. I think it's important just to double check everything. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Definitely. Definitely. Yes. And I appreciate you saying that about kind of having two reputable sources before you proceed.
Yeah. Just because, I mean, you better be safe than sorry. And that's one of my items on my checklist. Yeah. Make sure you have two sources that tell you the exact same tips. You look for any toxic lookalikes. Yeah, it's really important that you feel and know what the plant is.
And for beginners, specifically, and maybe people in general that don't know a lot about wildcrafting, can you tell me more about like maybe some misconceptions about wildcrafting? Because I'm sure people might look up, might just Google wildcrafting, but then they might become misinformation or come across information that isn't correct.
Yeah. So for the first thing I want to say is something that I already mentioned. You can learn wildcrafting from somebody not in person, because I think that's really, really big, especially with, you know, COVID is here. So I, maybe like wherever you are that you're listening or whoever, maybe the situation is different, but here COVID is still here. So maybe you don't feel super comfortable or you don't know where you can learn or who you can learn from in person. So you can definitely do all of this online through books. So that's a really big misconception. Another misconception is that all species of the same genus, like for example, let's take hibiscus. So not all species of hibiscus are medicinal. Some are, but not all. And another one is if there's a plant that's part of a family that is safe and great and medicinal and we love it, it doesn't mean that every other member of that family is safe. Some families are in general, you know, safe, but not all. So just make sure that you do your homework. Also, just because somebody looks like an expert on the internet doesn't mean that they are. I don't know. I always like to check out, like, maybe they can call themselves whatever, but I don't know, look at their experience, check about where they've learned this material, who they've learned from. Just because somebody calls themselves a clinical herbalist, that might mean that they're really knowledgeable and they've gone through everything that they should go through to get to that level, but you don't necessarily need to call yourself that. There's no federal licensing board to call yourself a clinical herbalist. If you do want to look for reputable herbalists or clinical herbalists, you can go on the American Herbalist Guild and they have a list there. But yeah, just because somebody like, I don't know, I guess it's just in general, like it's not just herbalism and wildcrafting, but just because somebody claims to be an expert on something doesn't mean they are. So just, that's why I said two sources that are reputable and trustworthy. It's good to have that information twice, you know, when you're going out into the wild and collecting it yourself.
Yes, definitely better safe than sorry. And I'm happy there is a website to be able to double check that. And also for beginners, probably better starting off with things that are, I don't want to say easier, but that are, have the most research and knowledge about.
Yeah, no, you could say easy. Like I would say generally considered safe. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of herbs that are generally considered safe. Not for wildcrafting, like for wildcrafting, yes, too, like an easier category. There are definitely like some herbs where some plants where it's like 1, 2, 3. Okay, if I have these three things, it's 100% this. St. John's wort is a great one for that. I'm doing actually a workshop in June around the summer solstice, which is traditionally the time that you wildcraft St. John's wort. And that's a really easy one to identify and it's just great. But no, there's absolutely easy herbs that you should definitely start with. Why would you go out and start with an herb that or plant that, I don't know, that can really hurt you, you know, or like, yeah, there's just no need because there's so many other plants out there that are easy and safe and you can feel comfortable working with. And the same for like if you're drinking teas and adding them to your meals or whatever other herbal preparation you're working with, all of the stuff that I talk about on my Instagram and website, like I usually just stick with the generally considered safe for most people herbs. And if you need to stay away from something because I don't know, you have like you're on pharmaceuticals or blood thinners, then I always mention it, but there's absolutely that huge category of herbs.
Just keep it simple and keep it safe.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And my last question for you is, this might be really hard, but what is your favorite, maybe what is your thing to wildcraft?
Okay. Favorite thing to wildcraft. Okay. So, that would be different than my favorite. I don't know. Oh my gosh. It's so hard to say.
I know. I put you on the spot.
That's okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. Hold on. So right now I'm really pumped on chickweed. Chickweed is, chickweed, it's when you know what you're looking for, it's super easy to identify. There's like a few small things that's like, yes, I know this is chickweed. It's edible. It tastes really good. And it's super medicinal. It's really versatile. You can work with it in a lot of different preparations. And also, I just walked out onto my balcony yesterday and looked in where we're growing blackberries. And I looked in the big pot and I found some chickweed that randomly showed up. So I'm super excited because now we randomly grow chickweed, even though it just magically appeared. So I'm pretty pumped on chickweed. Linden is another one. Linden is just awesome. Grows, I think, May, June-ish. And it was the first wildcrafting video I ever made was about linden. So that has a special place in my heart. It's my wildcrafting video. It's on my website for linden, and it's also on my YouTube. So So that's a fun flashback. I think I might update it this year because, you definitely get more comfortable in front of a camera the more you do it. So, probably this year I'll replace that old video, but yeah, that's a good one too.
And I realize we haven't mentioned your website. I will leave it in the description, of course.
Yeah. So my website is letsgetnatural.com. And, my Instagram is let's.get.natural. My name is Samantha Lee, and all of the links are available on my link, on my, link tree through my Instagram. And I'll put the link to sign up to these upcoming workshops in the Instagram as well.
Perfect. Perfect. Great. Is there anything else you want to mention before we say goodbye to the podcast? Anything else?
So I hope that I didn't scare anyone off by talking about these poisonous plants, because it's definitely something that we always need to remember, but that shouldn't scare you away from wildcrafting because it's so amazing. I love it. It will really just add to your life. It'll add just a fun, natural thing that you can do, get outside, get some fresh air. You can make a lot of things and give them as gifts. People love things that you wildcraft yourself and make yourself. There are even some things that you can make and freeze or other preparations, and you can even keep them for Christmas time, and they make great Christmas presents. So I know that's kind of like thinking ahead, but then you don't have to worry about it. Yeah, I guess that's it. Don't forget the discount code on the Spring Wildcrafting Guide, the ebook, because that'll have all this information in there. I'll go through which herbs are edible, how to identify them, what's medicinal, what parts to use, how to harvest it, all that fun stuff. And then I'm also putting my checklist in there so then people can use that and have that as well.
Great. Yes, definitely. If you were thinking about wildcrafting, go check out that ebook, and I will have all of the information in the description. Thank you so much, Samantha Lee, for being my guest. I've had a really genuinely great time learning about all of this because I'm a novice myself. So,
well, thank you for having me. It was so fun. I love talking herbs. So this is great. I had a good time too.
I want to thank Samantha Lee again so much for being my guest. I learned so much from her. I will have her ebook in the description, so please go check that out, and you get that 20% off discount just for Green Living Podcast listeners. And Samantha Lee's website is letsgetnatural.com. I will also leave that in the description. Thank you so much for listening.